This is the Edinburgh Reporter podcast, and today I'm with
Sir Sandy Crombie.
And Sandy, you are somebody who's pretty well kent in Edinburgh, but in that Reggie Perrin way, we better ask you, how did you get where you are today? Where did it all start?
About 53 years ago, I suppose, in terms of work, but 70 years ago in terms of life. I grew up in a wee town called Leslie in Fife. I suppose I grew up with a set of values imparted by my parents.
And was most of your working life here in Edinburgh, though?
Yeah, I came to Edinburgh when I was 16, I think, when my mum first said to me, it's time you looked for a job. I had some mathematical ability, and she'd seen an advert in the Dundee Courier for actuarial students. She said to me, look, I've got this advert which says, have you a flair for mathematics? If so, you should become an actuarial student. So I did have an interview. I was in my fifth year at school with the Life Association of Scotland. They were prepared to give me a job, but advised that I do another year of schooling doing advanced maths, so I did. And then the following year saw an advert for Standard Life, which was compelling for the reason that Standard Life had a hostel for its actuarial students, so I didn't have to look for digs, and the salary was a full £5 a year higher. It was £500 a year instead of £495.
I think by the time you came to the end of your career with Standard Life, maybe your salary might have been a wee bit more than that.
It was a wee bit bigger, yes. But it was a great way to start, and it was a great environment in which to live and study, actually, because I didn't have to spend too long looking after myself in the hostel. The hostel, by the way, was a beautiful mansion furnished with antiques. It didn't resemble any hostel that was in my imagination as a wee boy from Fife.
So now, all these years later, you're now putting your years of experience into a new firm called Cameron Hume. Are new to you because you're now the chair. What do you hope to help them with or achieve with that position?
Well, maybe start slightly further back than that. I left the RBS board at the end of 2017, at which point I'd been working for 51 and a bit years.
And was that long enough?
Well, no, in the sense that I still want to keep involved and doing work, not full time, obviously. But I had worked for 51 years in big organisations. I had developed businesses, but under the umbrella of a large organisation. And latterly, I'd been working in the boardroom of a very large and quite troubled organisation. But inevitably, when you get into these boardrooms, the bias of time is quite heavily towards what I would call governance rather than business. And I made a decision that what I really wanted to do with the rest of my working time was to shift that balance. So all boardrooms will need an element of governance. Companies need to be properly run. But I wanted to be much more involved in business. And the opportunity to do that exists much more obviously in small, early stage businesses. As chairman of a small, early stage business, I reckoned I needed to do maybe two or three, and in fact I am chairing three, and to have a bit of variety between them. So Cameron Hume is just one of three businesses I'm involved in.
And Cameron Hume is possibly then in an area which you know lots about, because it is a fund, a fixed income fund, it's financial, money again, maths again.
Yeah, I suppose that my best time at Standard Life, I felt, was the 10 years I was involved in creating Standard Life Investments. I had a very rare opportunity, which was to create something that was rather than just grow it. And it was a rare privilege. It allowed me to create the soul of the organisation, to define what it was, what its culture was, how it would be how you would experience it as a client, how you would experience it as an employee. So I just loved that time, and I wanted to have at least one of my roles in fund management.
What was Standard Life Investments? Why was that different from, you know, the rest of Standard Life?
Well, Standard Life was a major insurance company. The predominant skill set in there is the actuarial skill set. But we had a lot of client funds, and they needed to be invested. So they were invested by investment professionals. But investment professionals were, if you like, deemed, and some, by in, at least in their own minds, to be a lower and secondary class of professional in the organisation. And so it's quite difficult to get people to stay beyond a certain stage. If they were particularly able, they would tend to go off and get what they called a real job in a real fund manager instead of an investment job in Standard Life. So we needed to create a separate environment so that people felt they were in a business that was built on their disciplines rather than supporting a business built on different disciplines.
So you gave them a real career ladder,
so,
then?
So we created that bubble inside Standard Life where they could be the dominant professionals. But it was part of our culture that every job was important, whether from the front door in, every job was important. Everybody contributed to the business. So it wasn't just about those professionals, but they felt, you know, they could feel that they were in a real fund management business. So I really enjoyed that. When the opportunity came to work with Chris and Guy, whom I had been giving some advice to for some years, that was an opportunity I really wanted to take.
So that's Chris and Guy who set up Cameron Hume.
Cameron Hume,
tell me about them. What's their kind of background?
Well, Guy is, if you like, the investment man. He was head of fixed income at Baillie Gifford. Left there in good terms, but wanted to set up a business exclusively interested in the thing that he did most and best, which was fixed income investment. Guy I knew from while I was at Standard Life. He left subsequently after I retired, joined Standard Life for a period. Guy's forte, I would say, is organisation, the kind of more practical sides of business. Well, Guy's based on investment matters. So when I joined them, it was obvious that they had two legs of what I would call as a three-legged stool. They had investment capability that was strong, they had administration operational capability that was very strong, and they needed to develop this distribution capability to take what they had to market. So that's where we've been working in the last few months.
And what's different about Cameron Hume? What's different about their kind of investing?
Well, one of the things I would do with any organisation, again, I've been working far too long to want to be involved in anything I would call ordinary. So I'm always keen to ask myself, well, what is it that's different about this organisation? What makes you special? What gives you your individuality? So my first challenge to Chris and Guy was to put some words after the.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you can have either the indefinite article, A, or the definite article. An organisation that sets out to be A something is putting itself in an indefinite category, if you like. So A bank, A fund manager, doesn't tell you much. Certainly doesn't say you're special.
Just says you're one of a pack.
Well, I asked them, what are you going to be that follows the word the?
And what did they say?
Well, initially not very much, because they hadn't quite worked that out. So what the current working phrase is the leading. Now you have a choice of being just ordinary or exceptional or good or whatever. But, you know, what's the point of being ordinary? So they want to be the leading. One of the characteristics they have is that they are independent, so they are a fixed income business, but not inside a bigger business. So independent was the third word. And then we start to talk about what we are, which is a fixed income manager. So the leading independent fixed income manager became the aspiration.
And what does fixed income manager mean?
Really what it does is define a set of, not a single, but a set of investment instruments that they have the expertise to include in the management of someone's money.
And who are these someone? They're not individuals, are they? Are they more institutional based?
Well, they're first and a significant client who also now have a stake in the business, Sanlam. So they have a set of individual mandates to do certain things to make money perform in a certain way for this major South African insurance company, who also have a UK operation. So there's some of the mandates come from South Africa, some come from the UK ends of Sanlam.
And you know, we hear a lot about investment funds or whatever saying, "Oh, we've got so much money under management." I mean, is that how you define success, or do you define success in a different way at Cameron Hume?
Success for me is not just about size, I mean, obviously that's a measure, but it doesn't tell you how good you are. Success for me is being recognised as leading, meeting client requirements in a way that others don't. I think when you're talking to, it's really how others would describe you is your brand, I think. Many people think branding is about what you say to people, but actually branding is what people would say about you, I think. Yeah. Your real brand. And we would want people to believe that you get a truly exceptional client experience if you come to Cameron Hume.
And tell me then a little about the what's called the ESG.
It's environmental, social, governance. Essentially, it's about the ethical side of investing, I think is the way many would think about it. But really, it's asking, what we do is ask a question, how is this company run? Is it run with an eye to its environmental impact? Is it run with an eye to its social impact? And is it well governed?
So is that the only kind of company then that Cameron Hume would invest in? Does that define what they advise?
No, this is, again, fund managers will accept mandates from a variety of organisations, and the mandates ask for different things. It might be manage my cash, manage my long-term funds, manage funds that produce income strictly to match this set of outflows we have. So one of the mandates that people will give is to invest with an eye towards environmental, social and governance impact. So the Cameron Hume Fund, and it is a fund that anybody can invest in, is run with stock choices, if you like, or choosing which investments, having been run through a filter that would filter out those who have poor environmental performance or poor social impacts or whatever.
And I'm going to ask you this again then. So what are you bringing to the table as chairman?
Just lots of grey hair, I think.
A good head of grey hair,
well,
as we said.
Well, what's underneath the grey hair, I suppose, the experience. I suppose the knowledge in some areas and having done a lot of things that they haven't done, I think both are exceptionally good at what they know and have done. And I just add that dimension that, in some respects, gives them a kick when they need a kick. Or
so you're challenging to them.
Gives them encouragement when they need it, gives them comfort when they're a bit down. It's just, you're almost like the chameleon in the room. You're giving the room what it needs, in a way.
So do you think this is going to be a name to reckon with in Edinburgh in years to come?
I think it will be, yes. I can see no great barrier to success for it. I think it, and the ambition is not, you know, many companies will start locally with a local ambition. This is a company that has an ambition that stretches way beyond the boundaries of the UK, that we have a number of contacts which we hope will bear fruit in Australia and throughout Scandinavian Europe in particular. But again, you know, these are just starting points. I think we'd expect our client base to be from far and wide.
So can I ask you then, are you enjoying retirement in inverted commas?
I'm enjoying very much being semi-occupied.
Well, you're looking extremely well in it. Thank you very much indeed for speaking with us.
Thank you.
You can read the full-length version of this story and, of course, all our other stories online at www.theedinburghreporter.co.uk.